think about how delicately you hold your baby, you dress your baby, and you feed your baby.
We do that because they're adorable, of course, but also because their skin is delicate. Know this, there is only one diaper brand that we recommend to give you the gentle protective care your little one needs. And that's Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Their Swaddlers diaper absorbs wetness better versus the leading value brand and provides up to 100% leak-proof skin protection to keep your baby's skin dry, healthy, and beautiful.
And when you use Swaddlers in tandem with new Pampers Free and Gentle Wipes, you'll keep your baby's skin healthy. The wipes are made from 100% plant-based cloth, and you won't have to worry about tearing.
With Free and Gentle, mess meets its match.
That's right!
So download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Here's an honest question for you, with what I think is a pretty easy answer. When it comes to grocery shopping, would you rather wander the aisles of a store aimlessly, looking up and down your self-made list, or would you rather take a fun quiz about your individual goals and preferences and have a personalized cart built for you? Not to mention all the recipe recommendations and home delivery that come with it. If the latter option sounds more attractive, which I think it should, it for sure does for me, then you'll want to check out Hungry Root. I loved the creamy chicken and bell pepper Alfredo that I tried. It was so yummy. And the added bonus of doing all my shopping from home made it all the better. Right now, Hungry Root is offering We Can Do Hard Things listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/hardthings to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies for life. That's hungryroot.com/hardthings. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Hi, everybody. You are in for a treat today because we have Fortune Feimster here, and this team over here is really excited.
Oh my gosh, this is a pretty great group right here.
I'm telling you.
Come on. And we're all very good looking.
Yes, we are.
That's the
luckily. I'm so glad. I've been waiting, 150 episodes for someone to notice that quickly? Yeah. You're the smartest one we've had so far.
This podcast is called Eye Candy Today.
Yes. Eye Candy Hard Things. I knew that was coming, sister. Fortune Feimster is a stand-up comedian, writer, and actor. Her first Netflix special, Sweet and Salty, so freaking good, was nominated for a Critics' Choice Award, and her new comedy special, Good Fortune, so freaking good, is streaming now on Netflix. Fortune was a writer and panelist on the hit show Chelsea Lately. This show loves some Chelsea, and starred in The Mindy Project. She has also appeared in Two Broke Girls, The L Word, Generation Q, of
like
course.
I'm for a minute.
Fortune, welcome.
Thank you. This is so cool to be on here. I appreciate it.
Oh my, we appreciate you. So the first question that I'm sure everyone asks you as soon as they see you is, clearly you were a debutante, right?
Clearly. I mean, I think that my manners and ladylike behavior comes across pretty quickly. Yeah, I joked in the Sweet and Salty special about it because I never thought that would be something I would reveal to anyone. I thought it would be something I hid deep down in my treasure chest of memories. But my friend was like, you have to tell people about that. It's crazy because it's not anything I wanted to do or be a part of. But my mom was one and very determined for me to be one. Literally was working at a recreation department in town, lining softball fields, and then leaving and going to, like, you know, these parties where you'd eat little sandwiches.
This is culture is so amazing. You need to tell us. My sister has tried to explain it. She went to college in the South, and so she has friends who did all of this extravaganza. It's amazing. What happens?
Yeah, it's very, like, ladylike, like you have to wear like a dress or a skirt, which I had none of. And my mom, I think, made me go to like Lane Bryant or something and buy lots of stuff with shoulder pads. Luckily, a friend of mine did it with me. And so we would just like have fun. But it was a lot of like shaking hands and thanking people for having us to their home. And thank you for the iced tea. It was like, yeah, a lot of manners.
Which, and what's the point of it?
Yeah.
You're being introduced to society as an like available wife.
I guess. Honestly, I haven't read the history of it because I'm too scared to. I don't
Sister,
want to know.
Tell us.
Fortune, this is your lineage that came from this. So the whole thing started in England. It was this idea of when aristocracy, children of aristocracy and very wealthy means were presented their daughters to the court. Literally, this is where we get homecoming court, right?
Oh, no.
Presented to the kings and queens and court of this daughter is now of breeding age and available for marriage. And they're and the idea was, so debutante is debut, right? Your first coming out.
See.
So this is, yes, you're coming out to the world.
Fortune, did you know it was called a coming out party?
How ironic.
Yeah, I said I came out twice. The first one was just the wrong coming out.
The opposite, in fact.
I knew I was being presented to society, but I honestly didn't know what that meant.
Right.
And right. I, at the ripe age of 18, was not ready to A, get married, or B, get married to a man.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that it was only in practice. Like, oh, we're going to do this for like the like fun party.
Right.
But I wasn't promised to anyone.
And your mom was into it. Your mom.
My mom was so into it because my family had come from money. My grandfather was this very prominent contractor. He built all these things all over North Carolina, schools, churches, houses. But he died unexpectedly. My grandmother made some bad business decisions. There was a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So by the time I came up, we had no money. And so there was this big juxtaposition of like, my mom came from this world and I am not in that world. Mm. I would say that I would come home and like the couch would be gone. And I was like, where's the couch? And she was like, I had to pay for that debutante party.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
Is that not the epitome of like, here's your fancy dress, so go out there and look rich and try to get rich, but don't try to sit on a couch because we have nothing.
I mean, our house was empty and I was going to debutante parties because you have to pay for all this stuff. And I was like, Mom, we don't have any money. Like, we can't do this. You have to buy a big white wedding gown for this ball. And that's an actual wedding gown I'm wearing. It's nuts. And I say that my brother walks me down the aisle in a tuxedo. It looks like we're getting married. There's so much wrong with it.
Wow.
And so against my personality and anything that I want to be a part of.
It's amazing. I mean, the whole Southern culture is so fascinating. Can you tell us about your grandmother, about the bridge games? Because this feels like part of the ritual that is so ingrained in Southern culture, which is so beautiful and brutal. Tell us about the bridge games that you used to have to.
My grandmother was such a lady, like very, like I said, prominent lady back in the day. But when I was young, she used to have bridge games over to her house. And it was this whole to-do and all these proper ladies had their bridge tables. And they would kind of march us in to, I would say, the Pledge of Allegiance. And we had to learn how to properly shake a hand, you know, look someone in the eye and like make it a strong handshake. And then we had to like go around and ask everyone how I mean, I was like six, 6 or 7 years old. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. You know, I had that thick Southern accent and just, like, do you need anything else to drink?
Can we talk about why the hell the Pledge of Allegiance was required before a bridge game?
Honestly, don't know. As she got older, she stopped doing that thing and she loosened up a bit. She wasn't as like rigid. She was very into manners and how you're supposed to act. And So we always, my brothers and I have great manners. We're always like, except for eating, I'm a little like a bit of a beast. That did not stick with me. My wife's always like, why are you licking your fingers? You are a debutante. You should know this.
This is my favorite part of the whole thing because we have this Southern emphasis on ritual and respect and the debutante lady. So obviously this family that has these Southern values would spend your birthday where?
Where would you spend it?
At a tea room, Fortune? Would you spend it at a tea room?
We would not go to a tea room. We actually went to Hooters. It was my 21st birthday. And I was in the closet because, you know, being from the South, I just didn't have examples of gay people. I didn't know any gay people. I went to a very small, ironically, women's college where you think it would just be chock full of lesbians. Not the case, you guys.
Damn it. Fortune can't catch a break.
I picked the one women's college with no lesbians. So I was a late bloomer. And I remember my family wanted to take me to Hooters because it was like a place that, you know, we've gone to many times before. But this was back when if it was your birthday at Hooters, they would like six Hooters waitresses would grab you and parade you around the restaurant. And this is when Hooters was at the top of its game.
Yes.
It was very popular.
Yes.
Now everyone's like, boobs, we've seen them.
But
but back then everyone was like, boobs. So I'm telling everybody, like, do not tell them it's my birthday. I don't want that attention because the place was packed with these like old school guys. And I'm like, they don't want to see me being paraded around by a bunch of Hooters waitresses. So my brother's girlfriend told them, and sure enough, they came and grabbed me and walked me around the Hooters. And I always said it felt like the gay Salem witch trials where I was about to get scarlet letter in the, you know, town hall. Because they grabbed a bar stool. This was a tradition back then. And they make you stand on this bar stool in the middle of the restaurant. All these guys were like, what's happening here? And the girls circle around you and your present is that they jump up and down and you get to look down from your perch and see boobies flopping. That's your present.
Happy birthday, Fortune.
So I just could not believe it that was my present. And my whole family was like cheering and taking pictures and...
But cheering and taking pictures of Fortune on the bar stool looking at boobs, and no one knows that Fortune is gay still, including Fortune.
Well, my brothers claim that they had a pretty good idea, but my mom totally thought I was like looking for a husband. My mom was out to lunch. She did not.
Maybe that's why she kept taking you to Hooters. She's like, one of these guys.
I mean, even when I came out to her, she's like, are you sure? Yeah. I'm like, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
But so, your brothers, when you came out, said.
I came out to my brothers. I was like, you guys, I'm gay. And my brother said, yeah, duh. And I was like, well, you know, thanks for telling me that.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, why did you think I was gay this whole time? What gave that away? And he said, well, once when you were seven, you got hit with a soccer ball and you yelled, ow, my dick. And I was like, what? It was wild.
But you lived in North Carolina. When did you move to L.A.?
I moved to L.A. after college. I graduated college when I was 22, moved to Spain for a year randomly to like live and teach English. And then after that, so I moved to L.A. in 2003.
Okay. So you get to L.A. What was that like, moving from your small town to L.A.?
I mean, a total shock. I think if I had not gone to Spain for a year, I would have arrived to LA and left like 6 months later. But I think because living in Spain was so hard and there was that language barrier that I was like, well, if I can do that, I think I can do anything. Because when you talk about doing hard things, that was very difficult. And the whole time I was like, why am I here? I don't know why I chose to do this. But I think because I was from a small town, my town was like 8,000 or 9,000 people. My school was tiny. I always just felt like there was more. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I gotta get out of my bubble. I gotta see what's out there. I gotta like learn about the world. I was like, I'm going to go to Spain. I had no money. I got like 8 jobs that summer and earned the money and went. And it was awesome. It was hard, but awesome. I learned so much and grew up so much so that when I got to LA, I was like, well, at least I can understand what people are saying. And that's sort of.
How many people do you think you were teaching English to?
I was just tutoring. So it was like maybe four. Okay. Cause I was like going to language school and then tutoring on the side. But I'll tell you this, I am not meant to be a teacher. my wife was a teacher for 12 years. My mom was a teacher for 30 something years. My wife's mom's a teacher for 35 years. I tutored these young lads. And all they wanted to do was have fun. They wanted to like laugh and play games. And so I would come up with like improv games. These boys came from a very prominent family and I don't think they were allowed to have much fun. No one told me that the 6-year-old had like homework every week and tests every week in English that I was supposed to be helping him with. No one told me this. So every week we're just having fun, learning about animals and things in English. So it's my last day. I'm about to leave Spain forever. And the nanny tells me that the 6-year-old has failed English. And I was like, I have to go.
That is exit stage left. But it makes me laugh thinking about these kids walking around Spain having like the southern drawl.
Yeah. Do they have a North Carolina accent?
I cannot believe in hindsight they hired me because this is a family that definitely wants their kids to speak like British English, not this. So I don't know what they were thinking because, oh, those poor boys.
They're walking into job interviews now going, hey, y'all.
Yeah, hey, y'all. Yeah, so best year of their life. They had more fun than ever, but did not learn anything.
Quick math, the less your business spends on operations and multiple systems, the more margin you have and the more of your hard-earned money you get to keep. But with higher expenses than ever on things like materials and distribution, everything just costs more. That's why smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. You'll reduce IT costs, you'll cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you'll improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, and expenses don't slow down, so why should you?
By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/hardthings. netsuite.com/hardthings. That's netsuite.com/hardthings.
So you get to LA.
Mm-hmm.
This was like pre-GPS, right?
Yes.
So you did some kind of strange things to find your way around. And is it true that you found a bunch of L-word bootlegs on Craigslist?
Oh my gosh, you really did a deep dive.
Yeah, I did.
Wow. Yeah, so I was living in LA and that was pre-GPS. So that's when you were given a Thomas guide, a book of grids.
Yeah.
That you were just supposed to be like, I need to go to like the Grove, C9.
Yes.
You know, like, yes. You're like, what? So yeah, I was like finding my way out here and I was not out yet. I think I was obviously, something was bubbling inside of me because I remember that was when they had the gay pride weekend on the like local access channel. I'm like, what's this? Mm-hmm. But again, I didn't know any gay people. I didn't know many people at all in LA. And so I was just curious about the world and what it meant to be gay. And I just wanted some like information. And the L Word, I think, was maybe like one season in, and I didn't have Showtime because I was poor, could not afford it. So yeah, you could like buy bootleg copies of it on Craigslist. And I bought the entire first season of the L Word on Craigslist, and it just showed up, and it was, you know, just those blank DVDs. There was like eight of them or something. I was like, all right.
And here we go.
I like put it in, and just it blew my mind. I mean, not even the like salacious part of it, which it had plenty, just like seeing women go get coffee together or be in a relationship or have these friendships. Like I had never seen that before in the terms of a gay world, a lesbian world. And that I was like, oh my God, that's the thing I've been missing, or, you know, that kind of thing. And I didn't come out still right away, but it definitely like got that going for me where I was like, well, this looks pretty fun.
Yeah. I remember that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
did you watched it back then too? Or
no,
later
because
on?
I for sure I'm did. New. I'm newbie.
I figured Abby did.
She's new.
I'm newbie. I missed that whole wave.
I wanted to be Shane. And also I moved to LA shortly thereafter around the same time as you. And yeah. I kept going to the places that I saw on the screen. And I'm like, where are the fucking lesbians?
Oh, well, you know what Fortune did? Fortune, so tell Abby what you signed up for in order to find the gays.
Well, once I came out, I was like, I gotta find gay people to like show me the way. So I started joining like all these teams, like sports teams. I joined a soccer league. I was like, there's gotta be lesbians in this soccer
there
league.
There are.
And I joined a softball league. That's always
there they
pretty
are.
On the nose.
There they are. Yeah.
Because soccer's like, there's lesbians and then there's also straight girls that just want to have fun.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then I joined an African drumming class in Venice. I was like, I'm going to meet some lesbians here for sure.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I just started spreading my gay wings.
Innovative of you. But it wasn't the L Word that even made you, like so many of us, what did it take for you?
Yeah, what was the aha moment?
So the aha moment is very embarrassing. I would love to be able to tell you that some amazing lesbian walked up to me and just laid one on me and rocked my world. That did not happen. That took a very long time to happen. What happened was I was at my house flipping through the TV channels and I came upon a Lifetime movie called The Truth About Jane.
Oh, my God.
And it was this girl in high school who was kind of in this coming out journey, and she was trying to figure out who she was. And her mom, played by Starker Channing, was very like, boo. She did not agree or support this. Uh-huh. But the girl had a gay teacher who was very supportive and very attractive. It wasn't like that. It wasn't inappropriate, but right. I can
to
say
you,
that. As a,
to you it
yes,
was.
Exactly. So then the girl eventually realizes she's gay and comes out and is very proud and I think gives like a speech or something at her school. And then her mom's like loves her and proud of her. And I was sitting there watching this like 17-year-old go through this journey and be very brave. And here I was, I think I was like 25 or something. And I was like, oh my God. And I said out loud for the first time in my life, I was like, I'm gay. And it was all from watching this Lifetime movie.
They'll do it.
And I was like, are you kidding me? This is the thing. This is the catalyst that made me finally say it. But it, that's the truth. That's the truth about Fortune.
Were you scared? That's the truth about Fortune.
Yay!
For sure, that's the title of this episode.
Yeah.
Were you scared? Were you ecstatic? Were you like, what? How did the aftermath of that realization go for you?
I was like a lot of things. I was scared about how my family would react. I think I ended up not telling them for like 6 months. I wanted to like kind of figure out that world a little bit myself before I went and just, you know, pronounced this thing about myself. But there also was this like giant weight lifted off my shoulder because my whole life I had felt like something was missing. Mm. Something's not right. And I don't know what it is. I could never pinpoint it. I could be like constantly racking my brain, like, what is this thing that's missing? And I never had that thing with like guys where I wasn't like dating guys. We just had that thing where we'd like immediately high five. We had a very bro vibe with each other. Growing up, I was getting rejected in a way that I didn't even realize. I wasn't the object of affection for, you know, guys in that way. So I just didn't have that. So I just remember always feeling a little empty, like I'm missing that love or affection that all these other people have gotten to experience. Mm-hmm. So I think I was just like relieved, like, oh my gosh, I finally know what to even look for now. Mm-hmm. Before I just felt like I was just sort of, you know, aimlessly looking around. So it felt like I had a direction now in a weird way. And I felt free. This is who I am. And I get to now be that person and figure out who that person is. And it was a really like lovely thing to feel. And I also started comedy that year. And I don't think it's any accident that both those things found each other in my life at the same time.
Why? Why do you think it took the one to get the other?
Because based on how I am as a comedian, I tell my story. And I think it would have been really weird to get up there and pretend to be something I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't, I think people would have like seen through me right away. And that authenticity, which I value and try to share with people, would have been missing. And I think that's a big piece of who I am as a comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine me up there like, well, my boyfriend,
Timmy.
Damn.
You just said, I can't imagine pretending to be something I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But not to get too anthropological about like the Southern lady thing, but you grew up in a world where Sweet Ginger, your mama, would take you to Hooters, but then swear to God when she was dating a conservative man that she had never been to Hooters. And then you're out playing the role of a debutante, but you have no couch at home. So like there's a lot about that life that is sort of pretending to be something you're not, right? So where does that ethos come from you where you're like, no, I need to be fully integrated in who I am?
I'm sure that like seeing my mom go through her journey of like trying to be something she wasn't, you know, to please a man. I think that definitely bothered me back in the day. That whole, that I have never been to Hooters. You're just like, we have been there my entire life. Right. And now you're trying to act like you're a whole different person. Like, I hated that. I hated seeing that. And so I think there was that like probably internal thing of like that. I don't want to live my life like that. I don't want to be somebody I'm not to try to please somebody else. And she eventually grew out of that too. She is not like that either. Because there is a point I think that you reach in your life where you're like, I don't want to try to be something I'm not so that you'll like me. That doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And I think I just got to that place where I was just like, I just want to be me. I know it's taken me a long time to figure out who that even is, but now I have a better idea of that. And that's all I want to be. I don't want to be a debutante. I don't want to be straight. I don't want to be whatever it is, you know, I think, and that's where I think the weight lifted off came from because I didn't have to pretend anymore to, you know, please my mom or whoever it was.
It's exhausting. It takes so much more effort to be something that you're not than, and, you know, comedians, I think, have this beautiful way of being truth tellers. And it would be pretty backwards if you got up there and you were like, I'm straight. And
I'm looking for a guy. Anybody knows anyone?
Did your coming, bringing your truth to your mom, did that precede her? Because I know she where was she in her journey to come into herself? Because I'm wondering, sometimes it's like, when you say you weren't the object of affection of boys, it made pretending to be that impossible. And your mom was walking that line where she sort of effectively was pretending. Mm-hmm. Was your coming out a kind of watershed in her just being like, fuck it, I'm just not pretending anymore?
I'm trying to think where she was at in her life. She was no longer with that very conservative man who I have a feeling if I had come out earlier, it might not have gone over well, because she was in the thick of that relationship and, you know, was really enamored with this person. And it had sort of taken over her senses a little bit too much. So I think I had to get to a certain place in my life. And unfortunately, it lined up better with where she was at in her life. So she might have been single at the time. For her, there was acceptance from the beginning, which was amazing. I know not everyone is so lucky. And for her, it was, I'm worried that your life is going to be harder because of this. And there's nothing that you've done that you're just being who you are. But she knew, based on just being a person of the world and how people act, there are going to be people that literally hate me. Mm-hmm. Because of this piece of information now. And I think that was really hard for her, and it made her sad. Like, I don't want you to have to deal with that. And I go, well, on the flip side, you know, not being who you are is a personal pain that, it, to me, is much greater than any hate someone's going to spew at me. I would much rather be happy with myself and my life than, you know, then be, like you said, accepted by everyone. So I think, you know, it just took her a minute to sort of wrap her head around what my life would look like. And as a parent, you've envisioned like, oh, like my kid's gonna get married and have kids. You know, they have this traditional view probably. And I think she just needed a minute to like rework that vision.
And she did, didn't she become the president of PFLAG in her town?
She did, yeah, in Gaston County, which is a very conservative area in North Carolina. There was a PFLAG group, but it was small and not doing much. And she went in there and eventually became the president. And they were very busy and doing things for years. Like, she would go to gay pride parades, and those parents would write posters of support and love for gay people and stand in front of the, you know, the people with the hateful signs. And, you know, they would say like, I love my gay child, just support. And I would get emails and tweets constantly from people like, I saw your mom at this event or this pride parade, and my parents didn't accept me coming out, and seeing your mom, you know, be that way and love you no matter what, it gives me hope. And it was amazing. I think she did it for like, gosh, like 10 years. Mm-hmm. And she had to finally take a break during the pandemic. Yeah. I was like, you've done your gay work. Take a break.
God bless Ginger.
Yeah, she really resonates with a lot of people because she's a spunky, full of personality woman and just very active and supportive of the gay community.
Thank you, Ginger. Yeah. Our mom does that too. Our mom's all over the place. She's planning trans celebrations at her church. She actually changed churches. She went to from a, what was she, sister? She was Episcopalian. She was Catholic. Then she's Episcopalian. Then she moved to Universalist.
Unitarian.
Unitarian.
It's a slippery slope.
Moving the needle.
Yeah, my mom talks about that a lot because she's Methodist, and there's been a lot of internal stuff going on with the church. So she's very vocal about that. There's one side that wants to accept, you know, the gay clergy and all that stuff, and another side that doesn't. So I don't know where they're at with that right now, but she's always real annoyed by it.
Thank you for being annoyed, Ginger. We appreciate you.
She's trying to get those Methodists set straight in a gay way.
Good luck, Ginger.
It's so cool because it's like, it seems like a dramatic shift, but really it's just the refunneling of that energy. Because when it's like all the passion and the sacrifice she was willing to make, she's getting rid of all the furniture in your house so you could be a debutante trying to like make your life good, right? The way she sees it. And then it's just a shift in being like, oh no, this is where she needs me. She needs me over here instead of over here. And so it was just like a refunneling of that passion. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Pod Squad, some of what we share with you on the show are our individual, unique experiences in therapy and the takeaways that help us grow, appreciate each other, and navigate this beautiful life we're doing together. Thank you for doing it with us. But the things we talk about in therapy itself, these are things we wouldn't necessarily share with just anyone. I think there are a few things more important than finding the right person to share your deepest thoughts, feelings, and questions with, like a therapist. That's why we are thrilled about Alma's support of our show. They're big believers that you need the right someone to talk to, not just anyone. Alma helps you to find a therapist who gets you based on your needs, someone with whom you'll feel comfortable, heard, secure. Plus, and this shouldn't be overlooked, over 96% of therapists at Alma accept insurance because you want to pick someone based on the right fit, not just based on finances. You can browse their directory now. You don't even need to create an account. Visit helloalma.com/hardthings to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/hardthings. We talk a lot about the, I'm so scared life's going to be so hard for you. I think there's so many parents who out of fear try to change their kid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they're so scared the world's going to be. And so it's a different shift to say, okay, no, I'm not going to change my kid, but I'm going to work to change the world for my kid, which is what your mom chose.
Yeah. Right?
It's a beautiful, I think it's a better choice.
Absolutely. I would agree. And you know, I'm in a weird place. I didn't just like come out and like I'm living my life back home. I'm a very out there gay person. You know what I mean? I'm doing comedy specials where I'm talking about coming out. I'm bringing my wife on stage. I'm sharing very personal things about my life. So it does open you up to get criticism, to get hate, but to get to be that, you know, some representation for people that I didn't get to have growing up, you know, to me makes it worth it. If you can like help someone in their journey, I think that's so great.
Yeah. So you're not having to bootleg the L word to actually see other gay people. I mean, it's so important. I just think anybody who's put themselves on television or in a public way, putting themselves out there as themselves, as a gay person in the world, I know that I look back and I think about all of those moments in the late 90s and the early 2000s that totally changed the trajectory of my life.
Yeah.
And for you to be doing that now, it's like, I can imagine it's not just like a couple of kids that are getting changed. It's thousands and thousands of people who are looking at you, not only standing up there talking about it, but being proud of it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing that blew me away during the pandemic because my Sweet and Salty special came out and then the world shut down a month later. Mm. And I found that all these people were starting to watch it with like their parents. And maybe they wouldn't have spent that same kind of time with them otherwise. And I was getting so many emails from young people saying like they were scared to come out, but so they had their parents watch my special. Oh. And they would like watch, they would watch their parents watch the special and see if they laughed and like if there was joy or, you know, some positivity in their face. And if there was, they came out to them after watching it. And I couldn't believe it. And then on the flip side of that, I had so many parents reach out to me and say, I had this feeling that my kid might be gay. Aww. And so we put on your special to show them that they could like be safe to come out. And I was like, oh my God, you put this stuff out. You don't think about these things that can come of that in that kind of way. And that just, it blew me away that that could have that impact. And I'm really grateful that it did.
I feel like that like more than makes up for those four kids in Spain that you screwed up.
Yeah. Thank you. Like more. I'm just looking for validation.
You're netting out. Yeah, you're netting out really well. Let's switch to the opposite of parents who are afraid and shouldn't be. Can we switch to being children of the 80s and dealing with parents who should have been afraid but were not for us?
Yes. Yeah, I love in that every comedy bit to do some sort of throwback. In my Sweet and Salty, I talked about being a terrible swimmer.
Yeah. Oh my God, that part.
And running across the pool, which was very true. I still do that.
After being tweaking from the 6 pounds of Fun Dip you had
the
been
fun
eating
dip,
before.
AKA kids cocaine.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, what would be another like fun throwback? And I was thinking about like how, my wife's a kindergarten teacher for 12 years and she's so like good and hands-on and very, you know, careful with the kids. And I'm like thinking like, it wasn't like that for me. And I legitimately found a picture of me in kindergarten class and we were outside hammering nails.
What?
And I'm beside my teacher, so there was supervision. But I'm like, why at 5 years old were we hammering nails? Like, that just seems like too soon.
Yes.
And then it got me thinking about, the recess out there was just crazy because they did used to have these large tires, these random big tires that they would push up this hill in the back of elementary school. And we would run up there and get into the middle of these tires. And our teachers would push us down these, like, I'm not talking like a little tiny hill. I'm talking about like a ski slope size hill. And we would just be going, and crashing into like a wall. It was so dangerous. I got a black eye at one point when I was in kindergarten just because we were just left to our own devices and nobody cared.
No.
Nobody cared. I mean, nowadays, the school, the teachers would get sued and,
it would never happen. And then the metal, all the metal and the burning hot and the
things the slides are made of aluminum melting in the sun.
Yes.
And the merry-go-rounds, truly, God. Someone got stuck underneath it every day. I mean, now you get an ice pack if you have a headache.
That's right.
I'm like, this kid's kneecap has been
it's dislocated.
Open. Yeah. Nothing. But and I don't even know if our teachers went outside. I think they just stayed in the room.
The smoking lounge. Yeah.
So I really love like doing that throwback because anyone that grew up around that time was everybody's like, oh yeah, that's how it was.
I know. We watched the special with one of our kids the other night and I look over at her whenever you go to a throwback 80s story. And she's just like this.
Glazes over. Yeah.
She's like, no idea. And we're rolling. We're just dying.
Yeah. It's funny to see people when I talk about that little part about the calculator and writing boobs. Yes.
It's the best.
Oh, God.
Or hello was a good one, too.
Wait, I thought it was 60065. Is it 8?
It's uppercase or lowercase.
Yeah, it depends on what your boobs are.
I mean, Fortune was an uppercase boob kind of a gap.
I wasn't all caps, baby.
When I watched the special, I was like, I think she got it wrong. I think she got it wrong.
It's just because you had small boobs at that time.
I was small boobs. I'm more small.
Small boobs.
I don't know. I never.
We're a lowercase boob family.
Yeah, but 6 does work. That is lowercase boob.
That's good.
We live in this little neighborhood and this woman I had just watched your special and then I was outside. My son was playing in the front yard. Yeah. He's 10. And this woman who's walking across the street from our house, and she is, her face is like blanched, freaking out. And she's screaming into my yard and she's going, "Is that your kid?" My kid's friend had just walked over to our house. Okay. Lives five houses down. Walking over, and she goes, "I just saw a kid walking down the street alone." And I was like,
wow.
And it just made, after watching your special, I'm like, this woman is about to call 911 because she's seeing a kid just walking about. And I was she's going to report us. And when I was that age, I was babysitting actual baby children. We used to babysit baby children. They'd be like, "Are you old enough to call 911, but are you young enough to not have your boyfriend come over and make out after he goes to sleep?" Like, that was
I think
criteria.
I started babysitting at 10.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was like calling my grandmother saying how scared I was and can she come over and protect all of us?
Can you come over and babysit me?
You're like, "I'm not sure this 75 cents an hour is worth the stress."
Because I remember we would leave the house at 10 a.m. on our bikes and be gone till 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And our parents had no idea where we were. And they would walk outside, it was getting dark, and they would yell. My mom would just yell out into the ethers for us to come home. And somehow that sound traveled like a mile.
Yes.
And I was like, "It's time to go home."
Yep. It's dinner. It's food. My mom actually locked us outside. She would lock, she'd lock the door. So we'd have to pee in the bushes and drink water from the hose tap on the side of the house.
Oh my gosh.
That's heroic. That's a heroic.
It's so different, but
yeah.
So you
different times.
You mentioned Jax and that she was a teacher. Can you talk to us? Because you guys are so sweet and cute and adorable.
And Biggie.
Tell us
about
how you met. You and Jax met.
We met 7 years ago at Chicago Pride.
Ooh, ooh.
I never in a million years thought I would have any significant relationship that came out of Pride. But it was weird. It was the day after marriage equality passed, which seemed so wild because I remember I was doing a Pride show and it passed that day. And everybody that night, there was just this electricity of like, oh my God, like we never thought we'd get here, you know? And I remember going through all the ups and downs of Prop 8 in California and being so devastated and gathering in big groups to just sort of have this solace with each other. And here it was like, oh my God, how historic. And I had never thought about marriage, truth be told. I didn't know that I would be lucky enough to have that. I didn't envision it for myself, probably because of growing up, not having those relationships. So I felt very hopeful. And I remember walking down the Minneapolis airport and there were they have it all the time, but it's like a rainbow corridor of lights. And I remember walking down this being like, holy crap, we get to get married. That's insane. And then that night I met Jax. I walked up to this event. I was there for maybe 15 minutes. They had asked me to come host and I was watching the performers and she just walked up. She walked up with a friend and started chatting and I thought they were together and we took a picture and I was like, this girl's really cute, but I guess they're together. Oh, well. And she came back 10 minutes later saying her picture was bad. I was like, oh, yeah, sure it is. And I got this false sense of confidence thinking that she was coming to hit on me, and which I never thought. I was always that person that was like, oh, you like the person behind me, right? So I just was like, oh, I think she's trying to come back and talk to me. So it made me be a little bit more I don't know, like, what's up? Yeah. What's up, girl? Yeah. And
we kept running into each other all night.
Yeah, right? And we ran into each other all night, and there were all these different distractions trying to, like, kind of keep us apart because it was pride and crazy, but we just kept finding each other in this giant crowd, and yeah, started getting to know each other, hung out that whole weekend, and then dated long distance for like a year. But I remember leaving Chicago that weekend being like, there's something different here. Mm. This doesn't feel like some random person I met. Mm. And she never felt like a stranger. I'd never had that with anyone.
We get that big time.
Yeah.
We met in Chicago also.
You did? I didn't realize it was Chicago.
Yep.
Yeah. It was like Pride, but it was a librarian convention. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was amazing. Yes.
Same, woo! Same.
We loved those librarians.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you are feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Their specialized recruiting professionals engage with their proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal and administrative, and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Do you have a moment where you knew right away that it wasn't just a normal, casual experience? Do you remember any times where you were like, oh shit, this is my person. We're going to be together. I'm going to propose.
Yeah. I mean, pretty early on, even in that long distance situation, we went a couple months before we had that like talk of like, what are we kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But even early on, and then I was like, I feel like this is a significant person for me. Mm. We just clicked. And a year into being together, we kind of came to an impasse. She was a teacher. So for her to move, she had to do it in the summer or else it was going to be a whole other year. She didn't want to disrupt like kids' lives by uprooting and leaving them midway through a school year. We both were so exhausted from traveling because I was touring. Mm-hmm. So we were touring and trying to see each other often. So we were both just like, how are we going to do this? Like, it was a little less romantic than it should have been. It was like, I'm tired. You're tired. Like,
let's be tired together forever.
Yeah. Yeah. So we decided let's do it. And I'll tell you, that was one of the, even though I knew like this person is incredible and I would be so lucky to be like with this person forever. It was so scary because I had never been in this kind of significant relationship before. She had to make the decision to uproot her entire life, leave her friends, a job she loved. And I kept thinking like, am I ruining this person's life by having them come be a part of this circus that I'm in that is comedy? And there was so much fear for both of us, but we weren't really talking about it. We just were like, let's just do it. So we got her packed up and drove cross country and I realized that we had both had such fear and not talked about it, but it came out in a very crazy way. We stopped in Oklahoma City and we went to dinner and I ordered this like giant fried chicken dinner that came with like 10 sides. It was humongous. And she ordered meatball sliders. And I was like, oh, are we're just going to share everything? And she's like, sure. And our food comes and I'm literally eating like a feast for like 8 people. And I go reach for one of her meatball sliders. And she's like, oh, you have like 8 things. And I was like, I thought we were sharing. Because I'm just like so obsessed with food. And she's like, yeah, but I just actually want this. And I'm like, wait, what was that we're sharing? And she was like, I can't do this. And I've got like, you know, gravy coming down my face. Like, what I do? And like, we almost, like, she like left. We almost broke up over a meatball slider on the way for her to move to be with me. But I realized, we realized after that night, it was because we were both so terrified and just couldn't say that to each other that we were like fighting over a meatball slider.
Isn't that
she's like, I've given the meatball slider. Yeah. She's like, I've given up my friends, my family, yes, my job, my student. Just let me have the fucking slider.
Let me have my meatball sliders. And I'm like, but I want a meatball slider. I was such an idiot. We got to LA and I remember we went to bed that night, woke up, and just all that pressure, all that fear just melted away. Aww. It just went away. We had to kind of have that, like, rah, and get it out. And then she, like, as soon as she moved in, it felt like, oh, this is, yeah, this is what it's, we're supposed to be together. We fit, like, right away. We spent all of our time together and never got tired of each other. And it's still like that. Mm. So, yeah, you just have to tell each other you're scared, but it's so hard to do that, you know?
Yeah. Do you share food now?
I want to share everything.
Okay.
And she's still like, yeah, I you can have some of it, but I'm still like so obsessed with food. I'm like, I want to try 8 things on the menu. And right, she's like, just order your one thing. You're good. You don't have to have all of it.
Yeah. So when you say share, you mean I want to also take yours.
Yes.
Yes.
That's got what Glennon also is prescribing in that.
Oh,
yeah,
are you?
Yeah.
I'm like, I've ordered what I ordered, knowing exactly how much I want to put in my face.
Sharing is caring.
Mm-hmm. No.
Sharing is caring. I say that too. I'm like, don't you love me?
Don't you love me?
Don't you want me to have some of that? She's like, no.
Okay. This is called We Can Do Hard Things. Tragically, we only have another minute. What's hard for you right now?
Yeah.
Well, I'm such a workhorse. Mm. I am just like on that path of like trying to do everything. You know, I'm so lucky to be at a place in my career where people want to come to shows or that I'm getting opportunities to act or whatnot. I would say juggling all of this is difficult. I'm trying to remember to find balance because I want to work and do this because I love it so much, but I want to make sure that my wife is okay, that our life is good, and that I'm not so consumed with trying to, you know, quote unquote, make it or be successful that I'm ignoring the big things in my life that really matter, like my family, like my wife and us being happy.
Thank you for that. No, it's beautiful. We don't relate at all, but we do.
We relate. We relate
big. We relate big. Fortune, thank you for just making that decision to be you and be you out loud because it's really helping the world. It makes a huge difference.
Well, I appreciate that. You guys you do the same thing, like having your example of who you guys are and your love and who you are individually and who you are together. I think that means so much to people to see your example. So
thank you.
Ditto to you, my friend.
We love you so much. And we're going to have you on next time, another time, because
with Jax, please. Maybe Jax will come.
Maybe you can come for a double day, you and Jax. And I just need to know more about the butch woman,
the femme thing
that lives inside of you.
The bit that has started 4 million conversations between the two of us. Yeah.
Well, y'all know I am a debutante. So I guess you just can't get rid of some parts yourself.
Such a lady. Such a lady.
Well, this is awesome. Thank y'all for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Sissy, did you want to say something? You looked like you were about to say
Sissy.
Something.
Oh, I was just saying big shout out to Biggie. Biggie.
I mean,
if you think you love Fortune, wait till you meet Biggie.
That's
my dog is adorable. And my dog is the best. We're so obsessed with him. And we wake up every day happy because he's looking at us with unconditional love. And there's no greater feeling than waking up to him and coming home to him.
We went down a Pomeranian rabbit hole after your show. Because we also, too, are equally as obsessed with Biggie as you are.
If Jax finds another one like that, that's a rescue. Can you just have her send it to me?
We're looking because Abby told me you wanted to find one. So we'll let you know.
Thank you. We love you,
Go
Fortune.
Watch Fortune's shit. Yes. Go to her shows.
Good Fortune. On Netflix.
Do not miss it. Good Fortune. Watch it with your family. We love you. Thank you,
guys. Bye.
See you next time, all.
Bye.
We Can Do Hard Things is produced in partnership with Cadence 13 Studios. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really liked it. If you didn't, don't worry about it. It's fine. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. I know I've been there before, and I feel like I'm always expected to know everything despite having all of these questions. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, good news. Now all that info is in one place on homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better, they've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools with info like student-to-teacher ratios. And their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.